Hi, welcome to BCI Cattle Chat. I'm Brad White, joined today by Bob Larson and Dustin Pendel. Good morning, guys.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
We're going to have Dr. Weber's actually out on site, and he's working with Joseph Link from AeroEquip. So we're going to catch up with them a little bit later in the show this morning. They're going to talk to us some about animal handling. We're also going to talk about, it's that time of year, to think about water management and freezing water. So we'll talk a little bit about water management. We're also going to touch some on mental health. And I know as we've dealt with different folks and talked to different people, stress is a big deal. And we've gone through it this year with a lot of different aspects. So we'll talk a little bit about some of the things that Dustin has learned there. Before we get into those, I wanted to remind you, if you have anything that is a topic or something you'd like us to talk about, certainly send us an email at bci@ksu.edu. You can also send us an email there to sign up for the newsletter. We send out a weekly newsletter that kind of summarizes some of the things that we talk about. Before we get into that, Halloween just got over. What's your favorite Halloween candy, guys?
Yeah, this isn't really a candy, but what a funny story is when my kids were little, or when we went.
that's not answering the question at all.
I'm gonna get there. So okay. So we go trick or treating, and we go up to this house, and he just had a cooler full of ice and pop. And so my kids come up there, and he just kind of looks at them and, trick or treaters. Reaches in, grabs a Mountain Dew, and hands it to him. And I thought, well, that's odd. He's not prepared. He just grabbed what was there. So we go back the next year. It's the same thing. That's his Halloween candy. He's got a cooler full of cold Mountain Dews, and that's what he gives to all the kids.
Oh, so that's got to be my favorite. Better, nothing goes better with sugar than a big old Mountain Dew. That's what
exactly.
Those kids need that night.
Yeah, exactly. Let's hype them up a little more on a little more caffeine and sugar. Yeah. So that's got to be my favorite.
What about you, Dustin?
What's my favorite candy, you said?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, pretty much anything is chocolate. I mean, I love my Reese's, Twix's, Snickers, Milk Duds, Almond Joys, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And you throw in the candy tax because you got to start teaching the kids about this taxation idea. So, because I the first time I threw the candy tax out, and they're going, "Dad, you didn't do anything." It's like, this is a tax, dude. This is
food and housing. Food and housing. Food,
yeah, exactly.
Speaking of Halloween,
what's your favorite?
Me? It'd have to be a Reese's peanut butter cup. And there's really no choice there, right?
Yeah. Nope. So, yep. You're right.
And I know you've come across some new pumpkin knowledge in the spirit of Halloween. So
So I got some questions. It's all going to be around pumpkins. And so we're just going to go back to pulling some USDA data. So I got, I will say three questions. First question for you guys, which state has the largest number of acres of pumpkins produced in 2019, so last year? Which state produces the most pumpkins?
This is going to be a flat out guess. I have no idea, but I'm going to say Michigan just because it seems kind of like a pumpkin state.
Yeah, I was going to go north too. I'm going to go Pennsylvania.
Well, so I'm looking at a figure here, and the number one state, and I would have guessed this, is Illinois.
Well, you're Illinois from Illinois, so you know.
And so specifically Central Illinois, Morton, Illinois, they call that the pumpkin capital of the world. Now, maybe there's another pumpkin capital of the world in California for all I know too, but they do produce a lot. And so in 2019, there was a little over 10,000 acres in Illinois. The second closest, Indiana, Michigan, California, Virginia, all produced about 5,000 acres, so about half.
Wow.
In 2019. So that tells you. And so my parents, they live, you know, they got a 5-acre little homestead now, and the other 75 acres, I know.
Pumpkins?
Year ago, it was all pumpkins. Yeah.
Well, wow. So we're after Halloween now, and our pumpkins are getting a little soft and getting that kind of funky smell. I'm a little concerned that if you had 10,000 acres of pumpkins, if there's any left over at all, you might be getting into some pumpkin funk.
Pumpkin funk.
Yeah, well, I think the difference, though, is jack-o'-lanterns versus pumpkin pie or, you know, food production. So that's what Illinois would be raising. And so that actually leads right into my second question, which state leads the U.S. in terms of the value of production of pumpkins? So now we're talking about dollars, so value of production. Before I was talking about acres or quantity. Now we're talking about dollars, value of production. Which state leads that?
And you know, I don't know anything about pumpkins. So I mean, this is, so I'm going to go with, you kind of gave me a clue there before. I'm going to go Indiana, since it was on your list of big states.
I'm going to go with Illinois, since they led so far with acres.
So it's, Illinois is actually number two in value. Number one is California. And it, again, it comes back to jack-o'-lantern
type of pumpkin
versus, you know, food production. And that's why. So my last question for you, about a week ago, can you guess what the average price for a jack-o'-lantern style pumpkin is per pumpkin? What was the average price per pumpkin last week in the U.S.?
I'm going to ask a question like retail or wholesale? Not that it's going to make any difference in my answer.
Okay. So yes, you're correct. What's the average retail price for a jack-o'-lantern style pumpkin?
$10.
I'll say $10.01.
It was actually $3.63.
Oh man,
well, I guess we're the two to sell pumpkins to.
Yeah, exactly. Go sell pumpkins to those guys.
You can tell how often we buy pumpkins. Yeah, I don't know.
So I'm guessing you guys didn't have any pumpkins carved at your house.
We raised pumpkins and carved our own. So
yeah.
we probably put at least $10 worth of stuff into our pumpkins.
Yeah, and if you take your pumpkins at the end of the year and go out and smash them or throw your seeds out, you sometimes will have pumpkins next year. Sometimes not, so depending on where the mower goes.
My oldest son and his boy friends came over and they carved pumpkins, but then they immediately went to our deck and started throwing them off and smashing them, and there was a mess everywhere. And so I suspect in about a year or next summer, it'll be exactly it. We'll have pumpkins growing somewhere in our yard.
Yeah, that's perfect. Excellent. And I think that's, you know, it's that time of year. And often as we think about different segments of ag, a lot of those segments of ag are facing the same challenges this year, just maybe different forms, because it's been a relatively stressful year. As you look at with all the stay at home, and we've had kids stay at home, we've had different aspects of people working at home or trying to work while you're doing something else. So it's been challenging. And I know, Dustin, you were able to review, there's some pretty good material online talking about, and today maybe we could just address communications and stress, or stress and communications, and what are some of the things we should think about there?
So yeah, there's we think about just stress. I mean, 2020 has been quite the year. You think about everything that's gone on, from COVID to, what do we have? Do we have fires too in the packing plants?
Yep.
With prices and. And so there's, I guess I'm going to start this by, I'm an economist. I'm a trained economist. I am not, you know, someone who specializes in this. So I just want to put that disclaimer out there first. So yeah, there was actually a really nice, is over a multi-week extension program out of Oklahoma State University on mental health. And so they did a number of series. They talked about communication. They talked about mental health, looking for various signs. They did several of those videos. They talked about how do you manage stress? How do you manage stress on the farm? They talked about one episode that was on suicide. And so there was a lot of nice research, you know, or fact sheets, videos that was created by Oklahoma State. And we'll put a link to that in the show notes. But what I was just wanted to visit with today is communication. And we've talked about communication, three weeks ago when we talked about lenders and working with lenders and making sure you have that open line of communication. Communication comes back today when we're thinking about stress. And so in some of their discussions, the first to start off with just what is stress, and you know, stress is part of our everyday life. I mean, every single day we go through something, I assume, with you guys have some kind of stress, whether it's you know, working the pandemic, with Brad. Working with Brad would be one probably major stress every day. But the pandemic, right? We know that for sure.
Students are stressed.
Students
are stressed. Yep. The faculty are stressed because things are different. Well, when we have change, right? Any big things change, things are different.
We're online classes. You know, this year we went through the social injustice, which we're still, you know, talking, discussing. You know, over the last, few months, we've had all this political, like it's the polarization of this political. I mean, that adds to stress. And so you can think about all these things that have happened this year, and those are not directly said anything related to agriculture at this point. I mean, the pandemic, I guess, but pandemic obviously led to some closures, slowdowns of packing plants, which had an impact on prices, which again leads to stress. But in this video, they talk about stress and relationships, and yeah, I think they're referring to maybe a spouse, but you can hold that relationship with your lender or your employees, right? If you've got employees. And so they talk about how your stress can negatively spill over into your relationships with others. You can talk about, they talk about it, create health issues, not only mental, but physical health issues as a result of this. And then as this deteriorates, communication can also deteriorate as well. And so they talked about different types of stresses, critical life events such as an accident, a loss of a job, pandemic would be in there, or development changes. Brad, you mentioned this, family changes, changes within the case state, right? We're going from on campus, you're seeing everybody, all that physical interaction to see everybody via Zoom screen now. And then you just got they talked about your everyday hassles, everyday stresses, kind of a low level stress.
So what do we do when we're trying to communicate? What are some techniques for trying to communicate either when you're stressed or when you're talking with somebody that's stressed?
So they really talked about four ways to kind of deal with stress together. So it's not just you as an individual, but you and your employees, or you and your significant other, you and your lender or whoever. The first thing they said is, one, you got to become aware of the issue. You know, make sure, realize that you have a stress, or realize that the other person has a stress. So you got to understand, you got to be open, you got to be able to see that there are some stresses. And that can be from verbal cues, people, they make a statement or their tone of voice, or it could be a nonverbal clue as well. If they've withdrawn, for example. Second step, well, they said you need to open up. You need to talk about it. You need to talk about what stress is. You need to talk about the meaning of stress. And so after you've identified there's an issue, you need to open up. The third is listen. Listen. Not just listen and make comments, but listen with that you truly are interested in understanding what the issue is and trying to help and want to make the issue better. They said maybe ask some open-ended questions, give some time, give some space. And then the fourth step was...
I want to follow up on your listening I think a lot of times we fall into passive listening because we're thinking about what we're going to say, and then active talking. But if you can do active listening, which is one of the things personally I have to continually force myself to do, is to actively listen. But that makes a big difference.
Right. No, and I'm really bad at listening. You can just ask my wife. She would definitely agree with that. Because I've already, as I'm thinking about what I'm going to say, she's probably saying something. So I'm not...
We'll forward her this podcast so she knows you know this stuff if you want.
Yeah. And the fourth step, after you've listened with interest, then it is provide support. You know, try to match the needs, match whatever they need. And so, you know, show some understanding, show some empathy, offer encouragement, possibly show some practical, or give them some practical advice, help them try to find a solution. That was kind of the four steps, if you will. And they said by becoming aware, what you're doing is you're reducing your stress, reducing their stress, reducing the burden, decreasing that burden in the relationship. Opening up, you're increasing trust. Now you're able to trust each other. Listening with interest, the relationship is now being supportive. It's being helpful. And then finally, in that fourth step with providing support, you're feeling valued. You're feeling that you're understood and that you're feeling supported. And so those were the four steps, and that's kind of the benefits of those four steps.
Yeah.
And then the final takeaway for me personally, one thing I did, kind of just a tip that I learned, is take a little bit of time, 10, 15, 20 minutes every day, to try to have a stress-reducing conversation. And so that's I guess, what I learned just in listening and kind of reading some information provided from the Oklahoma State University's Extension website. And we'll put a link not only to this particular video, but to the overall Extension program, which has a lot more information in our show notes.
Yeah. And I think that's really good, because it's not just common sense. So I think it's impressive you went and dug in a little bit and said, hey, I want to learn a little bit more about this so we can be better at it, because it is a topic that we see coming up. Bob, I cut you off. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, kind of what I hear, because you're kind of striking close to home on some of these things. And for me personally, the reason I'm not necessarily always a good listener or empathetic is I'm worried about other stuff I got to get done today. But it makes me think of back to kind of some animal handling things we know about cattle. One of the things when I listen to guys that are really good with stockmanship with cattle, it's slow down so you can go faster. And that's kind of what I heard Dustin say, that when you're talking about relationships with your spouse, your coworkers, your lender, whatever, it's slow down so that not that you go slower, but actually you go faster, so that you work on those relationships, you work on stress reduction, you work on communication, and that takes a few minutes. But then honestly, a lot of other things fall in a lot more efficiently if you slow down. And so slow down so you can go faster. Yep. It's not just for cows.
Excellent. And that's a good lead in, Bob, because I think we've got a chance here to catch up with Bob Weber and Joseph Link, who are actually going to tell us a little bit more about some animal handling equipment. We're happy to have Joseph Link here with us from AeroQuip today. He's working with Dr. Weber, and I know you guys are putting in some shoots out there because you're doing some training and able to use some of that equipment. Tell us a little bit about what you guys are doing.
Sure, Brad. Thanks. We're out the Pure Red Beef Unit this week with Ultrasound Guidelines Council technician certification. So kind of a service event we do here. Technicians periodically have to recertify. And so they'll come in, and we'll have about close to 30 technicians this turn, 10 each day here at the end of the week, come and scan 40 head of cattle from our feeding facility. And to do that, we do 10 technicians a day. We bring in some outside equipment, and AeroQuip equipment manufacturer has been really generous in supporting our activities here and provide the use of those chutes for the week. And so Joseph comes and helps get everything organized and set up, and we get to kind of test out and play with their newest equipment. And I know we got, I think, 8 of your new manual chutes in the setup, and so I'm looking forward to using those. I end up running chute quite a bit during the period, so it's always nice to have nice equipment to work with. So
absolutely, thank you guys for letting us come in. But yes, that's exactly right. We have 8 of our new manual chutes without palp cages being used for the recertification.
And you say new, are they? A lot of us have been around manual chutes or hydraulic chutes for a while. Or have there been some changes made, and maybe broaden it from beyond just your chutes, but your chutes, alleys, tubs, what's new in animal handling equipment?
So with our new equipment, you'll see all of the new 87 series and the 74 series with 3E barring. 3E stands for easy entry and exit. Driving cattle psychology to bring the light. So as you're closing for the head gate, it is barred. The cattle believe that they are moving through the chute. So it really keeps the flow of the chute from an alley, from a tub to an alley to a chute, pretty seamlessly. Keeps the operation to a potentially one-man operation, allowing cattle psychology to, you know, take lead in the movement of cattle.
Yeah, Joseph, I know one of the other things, and we've talked a little bit about, and you've worked with us here in our setup with Bud Boxes, and I know you guys have had some innovation over the last year or two with kind of a new concept in animal handling called Bud Tubs, and I know there's several manufacturers have variants of this idea, but you know, I think maybe a few episodes ago we talked about animal handling equipment, and of course, user safety is a big concern, and the Bud Tub kind of helps provide a little more protection, kind of typical of a traditional tub, and that you're not quite as in with the cattle as a Bud Box is. And so tell us a little bit about kind of how that system came to be and how it works.
That's right, Bob. So essentially what our Bud Box does, you have low sheathing where the cattle flight zones are, driving cattle in and driving cattle out, paired with their 3E. We stumbled across the idea when we were struggling to keep our flow at the farm in Canada, you know, flowing proper. And we said, there has to be a better way. We watched the cattle patterns. We noticed that cattle essentially stopped at the alleyway, and we needed the flow as you're outside pushing the cattle in, making that turn. We needed them to continue down the alleyway easily. So we made a left bump out. At that time, that's exactly what we called it, just a left bump out, allowing the cattle to stop, make the decision to turn, keeping the more aggressive cattle to flow on down the alleyway. We then watched the pattern. We did a drone. We videoed. We tested. We saw that left bump out was crucial in the flow of cattle traffic and the patterns.
So it kind of lets that kind of just step to the side a little bit.
That's correct.
And he sort of, there's always one that kind of box a little
That's
bit
right.
at the beginning.
That's right.
But once one's there, the one that a more aggressive one will just go past him, then into the alley.
That's right.
And then he's the last one that just tips
and
in.
He pulls right in. Yep. He follows suit right inside behind everyone else. So
instead of blocking traffic, he's encouraging.
He's encouraging traffic. That's right. His pattern of going to the alleyway and flipping back through and going out where he thinks he's coming in is driving the rest of the cattle that are in that tub. Super, super amazing. And if you were to watch videos of this, you can actually see the pattern and how cool it is to say just that little 4 foot or 3 foot bump out allows, or the 3E is what it's called, allows cattle patterns.
I think it's been really interesting, you know, the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, I think driven by, you know, beef quality assurance and a lot of, you know, industry discussion about animal welfare driven from the consumer end has really driven, you know, lots of innovation in the equipment and handling side. And, you know, I think back to, you know, growing up in cow-calf production, the facilities we had, you know, went into our operation in the mid 70s. And that's the same equipment and we had pretty nice stuff for the time. But the same kind of design, you know, in place for, you know, 40 some years. And, you know, much of the animal handling technology hadn't changed substantially in that period until, you know, the last half decade or so has really seen a lot of innovation. And that's.
Well, I think one of the cool things that you guys are talking about is you're observing the cattle behavior and then modifying where there are sticking points, right? So if there's something that they're balking at, if there's anybody in our own alleyways or systems, we know there's points that maybe things don't work perfectly. Right. And often we work around them. Instead of trying to change the system, we say, oh, well, right, because it goes this way, I have to do it this way. But I think what's interesting about what you've described, and anybody can take that approach and take it home and say, you know, I'm actually going to spend some time watching the cattle. And do I have trouble getting them into the alley? Sometimes I have trouble getting them into a pen or going somewhere else. And it may be I need to hinge the gate the other way, or I need to put a drift fence, or maybe there's something small or relatively small that I could do that, as long as each time you work cattle, you like to see it getting a little bit better each time. Right.
Yeah. And it could be as simple as a tree. That's exactly what we at AeroQuip, we look at. We look at the cattle patterns in the pet cattle psychology, and then we design our equipment around it. Steve Langrell at the plant, and most guys don't have an entire manufacturing facility behind them. You can go out and build a chute or an alley or a tub and say, oh, yep, that works, and then have a company build it behind it. So there are some advantages there where we actually are using and testing and, you know, research and design right behind it.
It's not one of those cases where some engineer built it no. and you go, that guy should come have to use this every day for
That's
the rest
exactly
of his
right.
life because it sucks.
Yeah.
It's a cow guy designing it and with an engineering team behind
That's
him
exactly
that,
right.
that makes it happen. And that can make all the difference for sure. You hit on, I think, a really important point, Joseph, too, about, you know, sort of thinking through and planning out your handling facility. And we'll put a link in the show notes, too, for one of our K-State fact sheets on designing facilities, but also encourage folks to go out and look. You know, a fair number of folks are kind of in this process of updating equipment. Go look at other people's setups and see kind of how they've designed their facility. Particularly useful are ones that people have used for a little while, and they figure out where those choke points are or spots that they, you know, find out what they did right and find out what they did wrong too. Ask them the question about, you know, what would you change and why, and you know, learn from other people's mistakes is a really important part of this process. So
excellent. Well, we appreciate Joseph. We appreciate your support for the course that you're doing here, and we appreciate you joining us this morning.
Absolutely.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
The last thing, but not the least important, that we wanted to talk about today is water management, especially in the winter. And I'll say, Bob, I broke ice this morning, and it's in a tank that's just a regular water tank, breaking ice. We're adding a little bit of water. It doesn't seem like they're drinking all that much because there's a few cows in the pen. And I want to start out with asking you, I know water's important, but how much are they really drinking in the winter?
Yeah. Well, I want to emphasize that water is really important. It's the most important nutrient, as far as it's the nutrient that if you go without, the shortest amount of time before you really get into trouble. And so there's nobody selling a lot of water. It doesn't get a lot of press and advertisements, but it's really an important nutrient for overall cattle health and production. And they don't drink as much in the wintertime as in the summer. You know, typically the same sized animal is going to drink 50 to 100% more on a hot summer day than they will in the winter. But that's still a fair amount of water that they're drinking in the wintertime. So, you know, depending on the size of the animal, you know, if you're talking about 600 pound calves, you know, they might be drinking 7-8 gallons of water a day, pounds. Gallons of water a day. And a cow is going to drink, if she's dry, she's not lactating, she's going to drink 8 to 10 gallons also. So similar, even though they're a bigger animal, they're not growing. So still a similar amount. But you think about that for 100 animals, you're talking about 800 gallons. And so you start thinking about the size of the tank and what it's going to take to keep that tank ice free and keep water flowing. It's pretty easy to get below that, what you're actually supplying to the animals. And you know, it's not hot, so you don't see the same kind of response necessarily as easily, but you can start hurting animal health and performance if they're not getting that amount. And now for
so rough rule, let me go back. Rough rule of thumb on consumption, when it's cold, a gallon per 100 pounds, that's one that I've heard. Mm-hmm. Is that roughly, am I in the ballpark there?
You're in the ballpark. Yeah. A dry cow is probably going to be less than a gallon per pound, but a lactating cow is going to be
A gallon per 100 pounds.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Right, not a gallon per pound.
Gallon per 100 pounds. But a lactating cow, so if you've got fall calving cows, they're going to be up there twice as much as a dry cow. And so a dry cow is a little less than a gallon per 100 pounds. A lactating cow is going to be, you know, up there a little bit more than a gallon per 100 pounds.
Well, and from a cost standpoint, this is one of the things that is, you have to put a pencil to, but you can put in a nice water that's a freeze-proof water, or you can deal with other water solutions. But when you deal with some of the other solutions, the labor aspect is much higher. So we actually put in a freeze-proof water last year. It's great. It was expensive, but it's great because then you don't have to worry as much with the water. And I think the cattle, the water consumption's up. I think they probably perform a little bit better. It's hard to measure.
Yeah, it is hard to measure, but it's not a very exciting topic to talk about water and making sure that it's provided to the cattle, but it's what you need to do every day.
Yep.
So growing up, we had to go out early in my childhood. We had to go out every single morning during winter, and I absolutely hated it because, you know, I always would break one of the waters, crack it. When we finally installed that frost-free or that freeze-free water, that was like the greatest thing ever. You didn't have to go out in the winter or during the every day during the winter and
your coveralls could stay dry. It's awesome.
That was the single greatest thing we ever did, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty important. So I would go back to don't forget clean access to fresh water. And in the summertime, we think about those tanks getting all gunked up with moss and algae and some of the other stuff. In the winter, they still get dirty. It's just a different dirty, right? There's all kinds of saliva. They'll bring hay in as they go to get a drink, or you'll drop stuff. So you still have to clean those tanks out in the winter as well. So not just the quantity of water, but the quality of water. And many of the extension places will have a place where you can get a water test if you haven't done a water test, because a lot of times we're watering cattle from maybe from a well. It could also be from a pond. And at this time of year, that's where you've got to watch and make sure they have plenty of access to it. We appreciate everybody joining us this week. And Dustin, I had one more question for you. You talked a lot about mental health. If somebody wants to find out more about that, I know we're going to put some things in the show notes, but what else could they do?
That's a great question, Brad. So just like every episode we talk about, animal health issues, you would go see your veterinarian. Well, on the human side, you would go see your medical doctor if you had some questions or some issues. Another possible outlet could be your county health department. They could probably also provide some additional resources as well. But that's a great question.
Excellent. And I think reaching out to some of those folks is a good idea to get more information. And as always, we appreciate you being with us. And if you have questions, comments, anything you'd like us to talk about on a future show, send us an email at bci@ksu.edu.